Hello, everybody, and welcome to this LSE Ideas discussion in partnership with the Polish Cultural Institute. Our topic is Seeing Central Europe 30 Years On, Film and Arts in the Visegrad Countries. My name is Dr. Mary Martin. I'm a Senior Policy Fellow at LSE Ideas. I'm also the Director of Intent New Theatre, which creates opportunities for theatre artists in Eastern Europe to work with UK theatres. So the topic of our discussion today is very close to my heart. It is 30 years since Poland, Hungary, Czech Republic, and Slovakia established the Visegrad Group in the aftermath of 1989 and the post-Cold War era. And to mark that, we're going to talk about how the performing arts, film and theatre particularly, have been part of the history of those three decades in the region, and what the cultural scene in the countries is today, what it looks like in a period when politics and economics are once again in a certain state of flux and perhaps turmoil. To help us navigate some of the interesting threads of this topic, we have five very distinguished speakers who can help us with the discussion and questions afterwards. We're going to hear from them one by one in turn, and then we will have plenty of time for questions. If you want to put a question to any of the panelists, please put it in the chat box and we will pick them afterwards, and so we can have a good discussion. As ever with these things, we have one panelist who has some technical difficulties and hasn't been able to join, but hopefully will do so soon. But let me begin by introducing them all. Firstly, Karel Och has worked for the Karlovy Vary International Film Festival as a member of the selection committee. In 2010, he was appointed the festival's artistic director. He's also a member of the European Film Academy and the Lux Prize selection panel. Our second speaker is Csaba Kyle. He is the prize-winning Hungarian film director, the government commissioner for the development of the Hungarian film industry, the chairman of the National Film Institute, and CEO of MUPA Budapest, Hungary's acclaimed cultural institution. Christoph, who I can now see, I'm pleased to report, who was having some difficulties, but really glad to see you, Christoph. Christoph's the new
Snowball.
Is a film and theatre director, producer and scriptwriter.
Electricity.
He has directed many celebrated feature films, including Camouflage, The Year of Quiet Sun, Foreign Body. He's the author of several books and a member of the European Film Academy Board, and until September 2019 was president of Tor Film Productions. Susanna Ulicianska is based in Bratislava. She's a theater critic, publicist, and manager. She chairs the Slovak section of the International Association of Theater Critics and has been a member of its executive committee since 2018. She has covered the arts for Slovak Daily SME. She's been the head of PR at the Theatre Institute Bratislava and was co-founder of the Bordoski Theatre Award. She's also the author of several radio and theatre plays. And Irena Taskovsky is CEO and founder of Taskovsky Films, a London-based global sales and production company with offices across Europe. She's a film consultant, an expert on marketing, sales, financing and festivals for many film institutions, including HBO Europe and the Asian Cinema Fund, among others. I think you'll agree it's an incredible lineup, and we're very grateful to you all for joining today. So in that order, I'm going to start by asking Karel to begin and tell us a little bit about the topics of today's discussion from your perspective, Karel. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mary. Hello, everyone. I'm really delighted to gather here with everyone on such a special occasion for our Until about a year ago, like many others, I would be spending many days traveling, almost 100 days a year I would spend outside of Czech Republic because of the circumstances that everyone knows and is part of during the last year. I'm confined and staying home and have had time to realize what it feels like to take care of more of your own space around you, your ocean. And obviously the space around you is defined not only by you, but mainly by your neighbors and your relationships with them, which is something what makes our anniversary and the collective of our four countries very special. Central Europe, center itself, of course, it's not a word which exists by itself, but it's always defined what's around it, left, right from the center, east, west from the center. The Karlovy Vary International Film Festival, which is considered by the most important and the oldest film event in Central and Eastern Europe, have always thought about its own position. The festival itself was placed in the western part of Czech Republic near the German border in the Sudetenland, which is a very, very important part of the middle of Europa, Central Europe, and of course of the history of Karlovy Vary Film Festival. And mainly after its rebirth in early 90s, the focus on the former, let's say, Soviet bloc and the countries which used to belong to the, let's say, Soviet satellite was stronger. And we've been very proud of mainly of the program called East of the West, which is a section called like that because of young filmmakers from Central Eastern Europe that we've been trying to support throughout almost 30 years. And we've had a chance to basically create a certain bridge between East and West, which we think Center should do to facilitate the conversations, to try filmmakers and artists from Central Europe to engage in conversations and maybe also in collaborations with colleagues from all around the world. And we will definitely continue doing so. Throughout our work, we've been obviously addressing very important issue of the last 30 years of our territory, and that's transformation. I look forward to discussing today both the transformation institutional, which is of course very important in the world of cinema as an art, which is not cheap to make, let's say it's very expensive, but also and mainly the transformation of the soul, the mentality of people coming from Central Europe, and especially the artists that we've been trying to support. And if I may end this opening words on a personal note, I started to work for Karlovy Vary 20 years ago in 2001 as a jury secretary. And the very first of the amazing filmmakers I met in Karlovy Vary was Mr. Krzysztof Zanussi, who is part of the panel. He was the head of the jury and I was his humble servant, the jury secretary. So it's especially symbolical, this reunion after 20 years, and I'm very grateful for that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Karel. I think when we were discussing the other day this panel, I think that the mix of the personal and the institutional is something that's always so rich when one's talking about the arts. So thank you for telling us a bit about that. It is inevitable that geography plays as well as regionalism plays a part in this conversation. And we're lucky to have everybody, representatives from across the region. So I'm going to turn, as it were, to Hungary now, if I may. And Shaba, can you tell us how history and maybe a bit about the future looks from your point of view?
Good afternoon for everybody. I'm happy to be with you. It's a really special occasion. And if I may, I start with a small historical review, because the first conference of this region was 30 and 35 in Visegrad. It's Visegrad was the royal palace of the Hungarian king, Charles the First, and he invited Casimir the Third, King of Poland, and John of First of Bohemia, the Bohemian Czech king, to a meeting. Maybe it was the first experience about how can we create a small European Union. but it was quite a successful meeting because after several century in 1992, founded the Visegrad groups, the Central European collaboration between the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Poland, and Hungary. So this is all historical roots from the past. And what about us now? It's also the history because 30 years ago, I was a special guest in London as a student. It was a East-West Producer Seminar. It was organized by the British Council and David Putnam, the famous producer, Linda Mies, also a famous producer, and Katya Kraushova. Maybe do you know Katya? She was a very good friend of mine because she is Bratislava, was the original home, but Hungarian relatives and lived in London. So it was totally mixed. And it was a very, very big adventure for us because the British Council invited from the four countries, directors, producers, filmmakers, and they tried to give us special knowledge for us. How can we make in a new capitalist system movies? It was a very interesting meeting because until that moment, I grew up by a socialist filmmaking system. I finished my film school in 89. My teacher was István Szabó and Károly Mack, good friends of Krzysztof Zanussi. And we were the first unemployed class in the school because earlier everybody who finished the Hungarian Theater and Film Academy had a job in a social film studio. But after that, it finished and we had to go to the advertising business and we started to produce and direct and make commercial films. But it was a very good school among us because we learned a lot about the filmmaking, about the new kind of filmmaking. And all days I have a chance to make a new kind of Hungarian film industry after Andy Vajnal. Andy Vajnal was a world famous Hungarian origin American producer. And 10 years ago, he started a new movement to recreate the Hungarian film industry. Unfortunately, 2 years ago, he passed away and I became after him the new leader of the Hungarian film industry. And we founded a new Hungarian Film Institute with a lot of ideas and we started to build up a new system. Maybe later I will tell about the future Hungarian films. Thank you very much. The leader of the MUPA. MUPA is the Palace of Arts of Hungary. We are the Budapest South Bank Center because our sister institute, the South Bank Center, for example. And I'm in the cultural life of this region, of Central Europe, and I'm very happy to share my knowledge with you about the cultural thing. Thank you very much.
Shama, thank you. Thank you for reminding us also, I think, how moments of what seems certainly like uncertainty or crisis and change can produce some good new opportunities. Maybe that's something we need to bear in mind at the moment as well. As Carol said, we're facing very different conditions across the board in making art and so on, but perhaps we can learn from what happened to you at that moment, you know, 30 years ago. Thank you. So moving on, Christoph has been mentioned already by two of our panelists. Christoph, welcome to you. I say, I think you had some difficulties, but we're really pleased to see you here. Tell us how it's looked the last decade or so for you, and how do you see today in terms of your country, your work, and the region?
Well, that's a question. When to start? I'm 80, so I have long memory, and I am naturally inclined to start with World War II, or maybe even earlier, because Poland did not exist through whole 19th century. We were under partitions, so unlike our neighbors, who had only one occupant, we had three. And there are three different traditions in Poland. One is the heredity of Prussia, the other is heredity of Austria or Austro-Hungary, and the third is Russia. Very different. So we have very different distinguished mentalities that now merge, but the tendencies are still different, and you can often feel it. Now, after 56, when Khrushchev came to power and proclaimed the thaw, we were, like Hungary, almost on the edge of rebellion and of uprising. It didn't occur. I think that was great luck that we didn't have a bloodshed. But communists, authorized by Moscow, left far more freedom to Poland than to other satellite countries. So we had private industry, we had private agriculture, and there was more space for freedom in culture. And one basic difference when I compare my experience from the communist time with the experience of my colleagues in DDR or in the Soviet Union was that we filmmakers, had right of initiative. We could initiate the project, and the authorities were censoring the project. But in other countries, it was authorities who were proposing projects of subject matters and trying to stimulate artists to follow their basic suggestions. So this was rather fortunate. There's also something remarkable when I notice it now, that among our artists, only two were party members. All others, leading the directors, leading people of theater in Poland, were not members of the Communist Party. And it was a privilege that we could avoid this affiliation. So neither Wajda nor Kutz nor Haas were party, not myself. None of us was member of the Communist Party. And that was tolerated. That was something that authorities tolerated. Also, most writers and distinguished artists were not openly linked to the system. Some of us were open dissidents, some were half dissidents, but none of us was identified with the ruling regime. So at the moment of change, it was natural that artists were on the side of the new movement. Andrzej Wajda became a senator like some other distinguished actors, all always very respected. And that gave us more influence over new democratic government, and we achieved relatively good law about film. It took us a long time because the existing law, which we inherited from Soviet domination time, was already quite liberal and quite good. But now we have a system with certain rotation of the panelists who decide which project will be supported. And we have National Fund, which is constructed like in France, with, I think, 1.5% of all income from advertisement on television, on television, radio, and of course, cinema, goes for the National Fund for Cinema. So from this point of view, I think we have no reason to complain. However, system is not perfect. No system is ever perfect. What happened, what I'm rather proud of, that we had after 89, there was no particular crisis. Filmmaking continued, and we had very soon some quite remarkable and quite meaningful films to appear. And some films very critical of us, very critical of liberal and democratic new reality. We were critical from the very beginning. Some of our colleagues were creating films very, very, showing very negative image of the transition. One of our veterans, Jerzy Hoffman, created a very important and meaningful film, historical film based on a novel by Nobel Prize winner Sienkiewicz. And the novel, original novel, with sword and fire, was absolutely nationalistic. And the film made in the Free Poland was a revision of this original vision, which was unfair to our neighbors in Ukraine, and was showing the same historical reality in different perspective. I think it was a good sign, and there were more such films. Still, I see that there is quite a remarkable number of films that are very critical of ourselves. So we have in Poland bad tradition of national arrogance and aloofness, and what other adjective I should choose. But on the other side, I know I got the message that I'm too long. So the fact that this autocritical view is present in cinema is very important. But on the other hand side, we have commercial cinema and populism, which is growing and which is unfortunately very much promoted by current government.
Christoph, thank you. Thank you for those initial thoughts. We'll come back, but I think the idea of the critical view artistically is something, you know, to be further explored. I think you're also involved in theatre, and perhaps wondering if that presents different kinds of dynamics. But maybe first we'll turn to Susanna, who is also in the theatre from Slovak Republic, Slovakia, just to get a slightly different view from her. Christoph, for the moment, thank you. Susanna, tell us what it looks like from where you sit in the stalls, as it were, in the theatre. Do you recognise some of the same dynamics that have gone on historically and are there today, or is it different?
Very much the same. I would say that Visegrad cooperation has been with us not for 30 years, but much longer time in our history. I would say that without the help of countries that are around us, we would not have the independent Slovak theatre. I would like to go a little bit further to the history, to the beginning and the founding of Czechoslovak Republic in 1918 and subsequently I would like to talk about the rise of national institutions in Slovakia. For instance, the case for National Theatre is famous for great cooperation between the Czech and that time not existent Slovak theater people. As the Slovak National Theater was built in 1920 in a city where majority of inhabitants at the time was Hungarians and mostly Germans. There were only 10% of Slavic speaking inhabitants of Bratislava that time. It was one of the best examples of multicultural city that was truly Central European with a lot of different minorities living more or less peacefully all together. But in this situation to build a Slovak-speaking theater had no commercial sense. And so it was really just a political decision to improve and to support then Czechoslovak identity. And in a way, the theater in Slovakia still does not make a big commercial sense. So it has to be still funded and supported by various political institutions. Even today, 40% of our finances for theaters is going from the state directly, another great portion through the self-government bodies, and only very few money is really raised by box office and by some independent sponsors. So this is also one of the reasons why it's very difficult to talk about total independence of Slovak theater in political terms. We do have a very good Slovak Arts Council quite recently. It started in 2016, but it's functioning and it's helping a lot. Thanks to this Slovak Arts Council, we can now have almost 90 independent theater companies, but it's more or less everything is based on a very small scale. Almost none of these companies have their own venue and their own stability, which was very tragically shown during the pandemic, that is structure based on one-off grants, individual support was just hit so easily hit that at the moment the state of arts in Slovakia is very, very, very poor. So in terms of theater life, we share very much the same tradition, same a system of national theaters. We share very much the same authors, and many of our founding fathers came from Czech Republic or from other other countries, and obviously cooperation is very vivid between Hungary and Slovakia, thanks to our quite important Hungarian minority living in Slovakia. So back to you, Mary. I don't think we are really celebrating 30 years of our cooperation, but much higher and longer history.
Thank you, Susanna. Thank you for touching on some important threads in that history too. I think one of them that you mentioned obviously was the kind of the economic aspect. We can talk about, you know, the artistic record, which has certainly been very strong across all countries in the region, but I think the kind of political institutions and the economics of the industry are also part of this picture. And perhaps, Irena, you might be able to tell us a little bit about that. Floor is yours.
Now, I guess everyone can hear me. Good evening, everyone. It's lovely to be part of this panel, and it's always special, especially this year when we can't see each other in the real life and many, many of meetings and events were happening on Zoom. And as always in life, anything that happens, I try to look in the positive side of it. So the same like this, I guess now that we're not able to travel and see each other in film festivals or other cultural events, I guess we even more appreciate each other and appreciate this kind of meetings and events and sharings more than ever before. So thank you for organizing this and thank you for being all together here tonight. So my name is Irena Taskovski and I originally come from Bosnia. And you may wonder how come I ended up in Visegrad panel tonight. So I would see my role because in age of 17, and because we had a war in Yugoslavia, I left Yugoslavia at that time and came to Prague, where I finished my film studies at FAMU. And after I moved to London when I did a National Film and Television School, also studied a producing course in London. And since the beginning of my career, which is now 20 years, I run a company based in London called Taskovski Films, which is one of the leading production and international distribution companies. And the fact that I had that bad luck or good luck, we can see it both ways, that I experienced war and had to move from one day to another country, I realized even at that early age that actually my mission in life should be about connecting cultures and using art to actually connect people, to show what is beautiful about each of our cultures, but in the same time, what is that we have in common. And that's what I dedicated last 20 years of my work to. And the fact that I studied and came to Prague so early, there was immediate kind of love towards the not only Czech cinema and theater, but also Slovak and all the other countries from Visegrad countries. And since starting my company, I was, especially in the beginning, mostly working with some of the biggest names of filmmakers, especially from documentary scene from those countries. At that time, 20 years ago, when I started in Visegrad countries, but overall in Eastern European countries, that there was not really culture of international distribution, which means that mostly when films were made, they were shown in the country that they are made, and there were some collaboration done maybe in the neighborhood countries, but it was only a little amount of films that actually were present in other parts of the world. So I was very happy to take role in that and bring some of the most important filmmakers be seen outside of their countries. So people that I work with, it's Filip Remunda and Vít Klusák, who I produced their first film called Czech Dream and many others after, or Helena Treštíková from Czech Republic. And even though she was very established in her own country, she wasn't really known yet outside of the country. So we represented her film René, Katka and Marcella. And we worked with also people from Hungary, with Agnes Soss, with Stream of Love, with Slovak directors like Peter Kerekes, Markos Kop. So basically in all Visegrad countries, we discovered talented people the last 20 years and made sure that their films will be seen outside. So that's basically just shortly what I have been doing in the last 20 years. And I really think that the beauty of art of any form, it's in, as I said, like showing us about ourselves, but also opening up to others and enjoying our differences and not being afraid of each other and just finding the way how to live in harmony make better humanity together.
Thank you, Irene. That's a great note to finish the our initial conversations on. And I'd like to perhaps take that forward and kind of probe it a bit, though. Perhaps I could ask Karel. I mean, this idea of identity, Irene said it's about, the art is about who we are. How has that sense of identity through the arts, is there still a Visegrad identity? Has it grown stronger, or perhaps the reverse? Has it weakened under the influence of being in the EU and perhaps more recently the kind of waves of nationalism? For example, is the Karlovy Vary Film Festival, do you see it as a showcase for regional work, or is it more an international event that happens to be in the Czech Republic in this region? How do you see kind of the issue of identity, or maybe it doesn't feature as strongly anymore? Karel?
The identity is a very tricky element, because Visegrad started as a collective of three countries, right? Because back then Czechoslovakia was still one country. And then 2 years later, it has become Visegrad 4. And there was a lot of fear when Czech Republic and Slovakia was being parting. And what I feel now is that we feel with our Slovak friends and neighbors much closer than we used to feel. So it was a political decision. And that identity of Czechoslovakia before and Czech Republic and Slovakia now, it's not too different, but there is a difference and there is a lot of support from within the people. And what we try to do in Karlovy Vary is really to gather the artists, obviously from around the world, but mainly from our region, of which Visegrad is a key part, component, and to guide them through the jungle of the film world and film industry. Irena knows very well what I'm talking about, because that's been her job for many years. Once you make the film, it is just half of your work done, because then the other half starts, and it's to how you bring the film to the people. And basically, festivals are the best platforms, because the concentration of energy, the creative energy is so great that it really can show some results on the spot. So imagine bringing tens of filmmakers from Poland, Slovakia, Czech Republic, Hungary, and other countries. We basically show their films not only to the audience, but also to professionals, maybe future co-producers of their films. And during all those meetings, the filmmakers, the young artists, are kind of forced to define their identity, right? How they feel as citizens of respective countries, of a region, of the world. I've always enjoyed the fact that Visegrad was a group in which I felt we're sharing something, maybe artificially, because it's a kind of a contract, but it's with the neighbors that we've always loved. But at the same time, we have so much differences with our friends from Poland and Hungarians. So we enjoy the differences, and we kind of, and it's not only artistically, but also humanly, feel enriched by the identity of our friends from Hungary, Slovakia, and Poland. So all this is happening on an artistic and human level during any festival, anywhere in the world. And yes, it's really exciting.
Thank you. Shaba, I wondered from your point of view, this idea, as you obviously talked about almost having to change your identity at the moment when you had to remake the Hungarian film industry, but was solidarity also important across with your neighbors, and does that continue to play a role in your work, the fact that you are part of a kind of a regional identity?
Yeah, so first of all, I'm a Central Europe lover, absolutely. And I offer and suggest for everybody this wonderful region, because we have here everything. We have in northern Poland, wonderful sea, and in Croatia, wonderful South Sea. We have wonderful hills in Slovakia. We have also in Romania very exciting foods everywhere, and our common history. And this common history and common roots, this is our identity. And it was a very interesting experience by the Soviet Union, because they try to keep out from our identity, and they wanted to make us as a Homo Sovieticus. Yeah, a Homo Sovieticus has no past, no roots, no nothing. But here in Central Europe, we have stronger roots, and we living together since 1,000 years. We have very special identity on the field of sense of humor, for example. For you, English people, we can say you have a very special sense of humor, the English one. But we have a very special here in Central Europe, and then we can understand each other. And we love Hrabal, the Czechs, Slovaks love Karinthy. Maybe you don't know who was Ferenc Karinthy. He was a fantastic writer in Hungary. And for me, this is a wonderful occasion, all days, to discover again how strong is this region. We have no here oil, but we have a very special energy. The special energy is our culture, our common culture. This is wonderful. And everywhere, I love to travel in Poland, for example, to go to Krakow and to meet these values, which are coming from the past, but these are on the street or days too. It's not not a route only to the past, but bring these values to our life. And it came, you know, we lived this side of the Iron Curtain, and we had no opportunity to go to West, for example, but we traveled a lot to Prague, to Warsaw Jazz Festival, to ski Ruzion Barok. This is my identity. And at that time I was very sad, because of course I wanted to go to Paris and New York and so on. But it's very interesting, because nowadays I'm very happy, because I know quite well this region, by town by town, by food by food. So this is very important. And I think so, our task, our days, somehow to tell our stories. Mm-hmm. Tell our stories from the past and from the present. Because here is a very strange situation. We are living together in the European Union, but we don't know enough from each other, from our everyday life. What is happening with you, Christoph, with you, Susanna, Karel? What is your everyday life? How? And while we lived in this side the Iron Curtain, for example, we couldn't watch American movies. But that was a very happy time, because we could watch Italian movies, French movies, Polish, Czech, English, Russian. And we know better in the 70s what's happening with the poor Italian family, because we could see. Now in Budapest, we have several movie theaters, but it's very, very different to watch not American movies, but European movies. And we have to make a campaign about our European life, because I would like to know what's happening with you, Mary, by the Brexit. And I would like to know more about that, because we are building our new future. But if we don't know each other good enough, there is no chance to build up. Yeah, sorry, I was maybe...
No. Thank you, Shabbat. I think it, yes, it's a constant refrain. We don't know enough about neighbours sometimes, do we? We live beside them. But I want also to talk about politics. We can never leave politics out of things. And Christoph, you mentioned that there were obviously, there's political influence. I suppose political influence there was at the time of when Visegrad was set up, or before that, in terms of pressure and perhaps censorship. What are the relations today between politics and the arts in your country and the region? Is it a positive one? Is it a neutral one? How do you find working with the politics?
Oh my God, I spent all my career confronted by politics. Definitely politics is not my cup of tea. I think there are more important things than politics. But in the current situation, I think what we are really missing is a dream, is a common dream. There was once for us quite clearly definite European dream, something what was could be considered as a counterposition to the American dream. American dream attracted millions all over the world, all over the planet, people who wanted to join the United States as the best possible reality. In fact, it was not always best possible. And I think in Europe, we felt that Europe has maybe better dream than America. But this dream in Western Europe seems to be falling apart recently. There is no self-confidence. There is not much hope. There is self-criticism going beyond the limit of common sense, and very, very vague perspective. What kind of society we dream about? Society of consumption? Is it enough? Could we develop without ideals, without great perspectives, without metaphysics that led Europe through centuries? I think we, in our part of the world, we were so enthusiastic about Europe 30 years ago, believing that Europe is a better way of life. And obviously it is a better way, but it is not as promising as many of us expected. And there is enough bitterness and self-criticism in our own cinema. There is endless self-criticism in European cinema. But where is enthusiasm? Where is hope? Where is energy? Where is desire to make this world better and change things which are not good, or which are deeply wrong? I think liberal consumerism brought us to a deep crisis. And maybe being a peripheral countries, we see it more clearly because our disappointment is more obvious. And I think that's what unites us, why I find so much in common with my Hungarian, Czech or Slovak friends. It is because we are all, I think, to a big extent disappointed because our European dream seems to be, well, it does exist. I don't want to deny it does exist, but it is quite ephemerical, quite weak at the moment. And I think we have to contribute to recreate it, however ambitious it sounds, but sometimes peripheral views are more valid than metropolitan views. So I am full of confidence that good ideas will come from the distant countries, maybe not from the heart of Europe, because heart of Europe seems to be rather cold nowadays. But sorry for that. Some generalization. I'm not authorized to generalize so much, but that's my disappointment.
Yeah. certainly it seems that when one looks across Europe, the kind of the chances for a West East Europe cultural industry, which should have come about with the European Union, hasn't really happened, does it? We still have a lot of fragmentation. Susanna, you had mentioned, I was quite impressed, I think you said there are 90 independent theatre companies in Slovakia. Does that translate into, you said also there was no real independence, does that translate into a vibrant movement of criticism, constructive criticism? Christoph is saying there's too much self-criticism. What is theatre and independent theatre contributing to the political scene and the vibrancy of public discourse, do you think?
Thank you very much for this absolutely relevant question. This is basically what we are trying to solve and trying to answer. This is really the question for present theatre life in Slovakia. I started with one theatre historically in 1920, and now there is a lot of different initiatives, but we have to say that during the communism, obviously because of political and ideological reasons, the state was much more willing to finance and finance the building of new theater venues, new cultural centers, etc. Since just for you to understand the scope of this negligence to the arts in our country, that since the fall of communism, we only just finished new national theater that was originally started by communists back in 80s. It's sort of Slovak South Bank, really done in the form and in being architecturally inspired by South Bank in London. But this was basically a project that started back in communism. And since that time, we only had a couple of few smaller projects. I do not want to just talk about buildings. Obviously, it's not what the heart of theater is, but theater is a very sensitive structure, and basically it needs some venue to be showed. So these 90 independent companies are more or less one of associations that are joining together for one or two performances. Only very few of them have been able to sustain for, let's say, a decade. We are just celebrating the anniversary or 30th anniversary, exactly like Visegrad, of independent company Stoka. That was one of the very first independent companies that really at the time opened the minds of ours towards the new ways of expression, theatrical expression, the authenticity of their actors, or rather non-actors, was to us at the time just appalling. And something that we haven't experienced before. But still, after 30 years, this company led by Blaho Uhlar has no space to show their productions. And if you click on their website, it says next performances, ? And it says also we are not showing our performances, not just because of pandemic, but because we do not have a place to to show our performances. So this is a just very sad example of one company that, of course, it has not remained the same. A lot of splits occurred during the history, but Blaura is still working with new company and new students and young actors. So it's still alive, but with really appalling financial support. So the independence is costly, and sometimes you have to pay even the highest price for the independence. And once you are in some sort of structure that enables you to survive, yes, you can criticize a lot of things, and theatric people are criticizing a lot of things. They are very critical to let's say communist regime or to Nazism, but obviously they are not very free to be critical to the present government. Mm-hmm. So because no one knows whether this criticism will not lead to cutting of some grants, etc. Obviously, there is this arm's length principle in the Slovak Arts Council. So I'm not talking about direct censorship, but definitely there is a lot of self-censoring. For instance, at the moment, the politics is in the stage of revolving stages, really. It's very dramatic. We are seeing a lot of politicians being put to jail, those who were in power for last decade. Apart from few films recently released, very popular, there was not a big criticism to the government that just stopped. So I would say it's very in a sort is comfortable to be critical to the state secret police during the communism, because no one really is so sensitive to this issue anymore. But the present corruption and links to mafia are very, very sensitive. I'm critical, but it doesn't mean that they were not very important shows that were even on the stage, big stage of national theaters, such as Elites or No Show Today by Jirka Havelka, the Czech director, that were really able to attract a lot of audience and raised very important questions. But in general, artists somehow a little bit escaping to the arts for the art's sake, little bit escaping to abstract presentation rather than being very topical.
Yeah. Thank you for that view. It is obviously a time when arts everywhere, not just in Central Europe, are facing extraordinary challenges. And as you said, Susanna, you know, it's about structures. It's about physical structures as well as kind of how people organize their work and organize their creativity. Irena, do you think when you look at the kind of future now over the next few years, my own country certainly has had to have a huge bailout of theaters and the culture industry. Is there anything similar in the region? How do you see the robustness, the resilience or not, of the structures for making films and producing films? How do you see that facing the current crisis?
Well, I have to say, like always, again, I'm always trying to look what is positive in all of this. And even though, of course, this year was a very special year, but I could, and of course, affected many, many filmmakers all around the globe, both in making films, but also distributing films. But still, I see things moving forward. It's not that it's all stopped. Going from country to country, I guess there are still films being made, there are still films being financed. And from distribution point of view, even though festivals cannot be happening in the physical form, but they're all going, most of them, they're going online. And as Karel said, festivals have really important role for many films that are being made in all these countries, especially when we are talking about art house cinema. So this is happening. And at the same time, I noticed that lots of new collaborations were established. For example, even our own company, we started our own little VOD platform where people can just go online and watch films. And then what we did also, we started lots of new collaborations with cinemas, because cinemas couldn't show films anymore in physical theaters. So we started doing online screenings, like organized online screenings, and inviting people to watch film together, even though from your own home, but still having this collective feeling of being together and then discussing the film online. So there are small steps happening, and we are all hoping that this will be over soon and that we will just continue like before. But, you know, like every crisis, there is something to learn from and get to see how, just to kind of adjust and see that even until, it was never easy, but when something like this happens, you start just being somehow even more creative and even more kind of inventive, not only in terms of like what kind of ideas we want to talk about in films, but also how do we produce them? How do we distribute them? So yeah, I think it was never easy, especially as I said in art house, but it's always something new to come. And it's not all stopped.
Yes, yeah. Great, thank you. Well, we've got some interesting questions that touch on some of those and other points from our audience. I'm going to begin with, sorry, not in the order that you necessarily came in and asked them, but it just seemed to me that Derek Woodgate's question, Professor Derek Woodgate from Rijeka, Croatia, beyond traditional art forms, to what degree are the digital interactive arts successfully empowering, successfully empowering political discussion in the region through paradigm shifting formats? So that's a bit about what you were mentioning with new formats, Irena, but perhaps any of the other panelists like to pick up on that. What's the relationship between new forms and political discussion? Irena, do you want to have a go at that first?
Let me see. So just to kind of, so you are asking these new formats that are kind of started now because of the Corona times, how that's affecting political situation. Is that what you are saying?
Are they empowering political discussion? Yeah, are digital interactive arts successfully empowering political discussion in the region through paradigm shifting formats? That's Derek Woodgate. Good question.
Well, I can't say anything like for as a fact for the political and how, but what I can see, just like for always from the people point of view, the fact that we are all collectively put for the first time ever in humanity in the same situation. I don't think there was any other event ever happening that everyone, doesn't matter which part of the world or planet we came from, has experienced the same thing at the same time. And just this awareness of the fact that doesn't matter, are we from Central Europe, from UK or US or Latin America, we have experienced one thing at the same time, which kind of brings to human consciousness something that is this togetherness, and that we all in different parts of the world starting realizing certain things. And the fact that before we had to travel and be physically connected and planning and working together, suddenly we also realized we can connect and there is something that we have in common. So I feel, again, even though this was not so good for all of us, but on the other side, it kind of empowered us. No, it suddenly, lots of people who are thinking the same, living for the same thing, are now connected. And if there are not immediate changes happening, I think there are many changes to come in the future months and years, thanks to what just happened. So I don't know if I fully answered your question, but I think at least it gave some base to it.
Thank you. Yes.
I add something maybe specific concerning last year. We had to cancel, obviously, the physical version of the festival, but at some point of late spring, the cinemas were reopened, so we kind of gathered together a bunch of films and we started to tour Czech Republic. Obviously, we could not gather people in the town of the festival, Karlovy Vary, but we decided to support local cinemas by going around, and we did a few, let's say, new formats, which allowed us to maybe do something that we could not do during a physical festival, meaning to connect with the filmmakers and to connect with all the cinemas at the same time, which was about 85 cinemas. And we did a Q&A with, let's say, Italian filmmakers concerning their films, and direct questions being asked from all sorts of corners of the Czech Republic allowed them to start talking quite openly about the political situation in Italy and how their film, in specific film Bad Tales, which was presented last year at the Berlinale, reflected the political situation. So there was a direct conversation with hundreds of people through Rome, I mean from Rome, through digital media or through digital means. Maybe it would have been less impactful because the movie would have been screened in a cinema for 500 people, 1,000 people, maybe with who knows how many people in the hall. So when there is will and creativity, and I'm not talking about Kalevari, I've seen many online festivals creating all kinds of discussion platforms, which really allowed discussion. Maybe, you know, people who are coming from the countries originally of the Visegrad, but they live in the United States, etc. So if we can use the means well, we can be even more connected, and the political discussion can be stronger.
Thank you. I've got a question from Attila Kirali, who's a film TV lecturer at Buckinghamshire College in the UK. He's teaching the 16 to 21 age group, the youngest in the UK, entering the world of media. He says, as a result of the endless tsunami of high budget Hollywood movies, decade after decade, the majority of my students have never heard about Eastern European cinema, neither fictional nor non-fictional. Is there any plan in place to break through this Hollywood cultural iron curtain in the near future? Who would like to have a go at that?
So this is a very important question. Because the most important question in our field, in film or theater, this is distribution. Because without distribution, we can't do new movies, we can't do anything. We need income. This is an economical question too. You said this is a forum. This is the main problem, not only the Visegrad or Central European countries, but whole Europe. We have to make a much more stronger distribution for our movies. Not only our movies, but our television productions, our streaming channels. And I have to say proudly, we use this strange time by the Hungarian National Film Institute and create a new streaming channel. The channel's title is Filmio. And we started a negotiation with the Visegrad four countries to make this Filmio not only for the Hungarian viewers, but for the Central European region. And the reason why, this is the same. In the Hungarian Film Archive, we collected wonderful movies, and now there is the digitalization, the old movies and cleaning and so on. And we started this new Filmio channel with 160 old Hungarian movies. And this is a huge success now here in Hungary. And we started to negotiate with the Czech archives because we have very good connections, and the Polish archives. And we will start with the Slovak archives, because for the youngsters, we have to show what's happened in the last 120 years, because the Hungarian film art in this year will be 120 years old. After 5 years, the Lumiere brothers, when discovered the movie, we started to make movies here in Hungary. We have wonderful films, a lot of co-productions with you guys, I mean, with Polish, Czechs, and so on. And we love these movies because we love the characters, we love the subjects. And I think so, this is a very good beginning to talk about our movies, to make special distribution for it. The next step, because a lot of people said here in Hungary, okay, we are closing the movies because the streaming channel is not a good thing. But we will start from September to make film clubs. When I was a university student, we have special film clubs. Maybe you don't know in England, what does it mean film club? It's when there's a community, university students or others, and watching together a movie, and we are talking about it. This is very, very important. But this, by this Filmio or streaming channel, there will be an opportunity to show from film clubs for a small society to movies. And this is also a very important step ahead about the distribution, because we have no big cinemas. We have art cinemas, as you, Irena, mentioned, but we have not enough movies. When I was a youngster, Budapest, we have 100 movie theaters, separate. Now we have big cinema centers in the shopping malls. There are American movies. It's very difficult to get a place for the Hungarian movies. But we have to be very pushy, and we have to be together very pushy, because this is our goal, to show, because in by these movies, we have opportunity to show our identity. And with our new movies, because to this channel we will put our new movies, our new miniseries, because this is also very important by our storytelling. I believe it will be a huge success. And I'm addressing to you guys, please collaborate in Filmio and go ahead on the film of this kind of distribution. Yeah.
Daniel Pagen is asking, do you subtitle these Hungarian movies?
Yes. We started to make it, because all days, this is only in Hungary, you can reach. But from the next year, you will reach in Europe. And first time, it will be in English subtitle. But we would like to make not only in English, but other subtitles too.
And perhaps a related question, Vera Lustig asks, it's for anybody on the panel, she's of Czech extraction, but living in the UK. How good do you think media coverage and discussion of theatre and art house European film is in the Visegrad countries? Which makes the point that British media tends to focus on US and UK output in terms of films. Susanna, do you have a feeling on, it's harder with theatre? Translates more, but
theater is even more difficult to promote in foreign countries than films. We sometimes envy our film colleagues that they have the easy platform to share this, while the theater experience is almost not transferable. But I would like to mention a couple of things before to answering your question. That European Union is planning to set up Perform Europe like digital platform for touring. So this would enable us maybe in future to share the cultural and especially theater pieces, performances in much broader arena. There are first steps done by our Czech colleagues called Ramox, and they are sharing also some Slovak performances, let's say. And I know there are similar activities online in many other countries, like Edison Online and these, and not speaking about it, some of the films from Central Europe, they are already available on Netflix and other platforms. So if you really are interested, you can find, for instance, the only Oscar film from Czechoslovakia shop on the main street on Netflix as well, with subtitles. But that's a really broader question, and the cultural discussion you mentioned is crucial, definitely. I've been working for years in the media, and it's just inevitable part of the whole circus. It's not just about distribution, it's not just about production, but also the critical reflection. But when I ask some friends in Britain about the question, why are you not interested in our films, our theaters, they just replied in a very strict manner, if we are buying your cars, we would be interested in your culture as well. So I think that there is some economic reason. We are not economically enough important for maybe to be interested in our culture, just to put it very frankly. Though I would like to stress, Slovakia is one of the highest productors of cars. So car you can buy, it's a very high there is a high chance that it was produced by Slovaks. So let's be interested in Slovak culture as well.
Indeed. I've got two questions here, which are about Visegrad Group itself. Maybe, Christoph, you can help us with these. Martin Grominitsky, who is an advertising professional in Warsaw, is asking, do you feel it's only of late that the Visegrad Group has come of age, whereas neighbours like Slovenia, Romania, Ukraine or Austria are stepping up their interest in the grouping? Up to a few years back, our countries kept looking to Western European partners. In my view, this is now rapidly changing. Isn't it time to intensify parallel contacts, including the cultural ones, and look for inspiration that may be lacking? And linked to that, possibly also about the what is your view of the Visegrad Group, Jakub Wojcik, who's at Andrássy University in Budapest, says some people worry the Visegrad Group is repositioning to promoting this question's gone off my screen. Is repositioning to promoting nationalist and ultra right wing ideas. Do you think artists in the region would cooperate with this or resist, or perhaps be accidentally complicit in promoting this political agenda? Is this happening? Is it a risk? He asks. Christoph, do you want to listen to the politics?
Right, it is a risk, and there is among the artists the amount of conformists is always very big. So they sell the talent for something that sells well for the market. But I don't think it is very relevant, because this happened in the past, and we know that the propagandistic art has never been very successful with the audience. But what I'm curious is, if our part of the world, this peripheral Europe, could create more balanced vision of human happiness? And if so, then we may produce products that will be attractive to the others. I know that in Bhutan, the index of happiness is the highest in the world. Unfortunately, they have no cinema. But if they had, we will all go to see Bhutan films to understand why they consider themselves happy. How do they create, how they construct their life to be so pleased with it? And I think this is the only chance we have to propose a vision of life that will differ from most tendencies which are now prevailing in Western Europe, and sometimes leave us very disappointed because there is either cynicism or bitterness or complex of guilt, however we are all guilty of something, but no vision, no perspective, no hope, no desire to leave, to create a better world. And we should always try to see some better vision of the world and see what should we change in our life in order to make this life more meaningful.
Thank you, Christoph. Irena, I think you have a view on Jakob's question, particularly on what Visegrad is in danger or not of supporting.
I'm always so bad in following the questions. Can you please remind me, was it?
So Jakob was saying, I'm paraphrasing him, but Visegrad was established to in a positive spirit of integration, and it was maybe easy for artists to support that. But now we are at a point where some nationalist movements or right-wing extremists see the group as an alternative to the EU, a part of Intermarium. Is there any, how do you see it? Is there any artistic potential in this new image of the Visegrad Four to be used? But is there a risk that some artists will fall into this trap, this narrative, or are they immune to it?
I'm not sure if I would have exact answer, but what I would say in general, what I see as my role or anyone of us working in arts, it's basically to use our talent and energy exactly for the opposite, not to support racism or any divisions between humans, but actually looking at what is that unites us, no? If some people choose to do differently, well, we can't stop them. All we can do is to become stronger, to be doing the opposite. Whatever is happening in Visegrad countries, it's not only happening here, it's all over the world. And I really think that always, but even now, again, more than ever, arts have super important role. And meetings like this and exchanges online, and the fact that, as I said, the fact that we for first time ever experienced something, the same thing that many people in different countries, doesn't matter how rich or poor countries are, many people stayed without work, many people had the same fear of getting ill. And I think just this collective experience of the same, it's something that connects us. And all we have to make sure is that we, it's not always easy because propaganda in each country, you know, politicians, unfortunately, they speak what's beneficial for them in that moment, not really thinking about what's good for people. And because media, especially with the mass media, are so strong that it's not always easy to get information that keeps the critical mass among people. So that's why, again, we have to do our work. We have to have festivals, we have to have cultural institutions in the country, outside the country. We have had to have producers, directors, distributors, and to keep making films and theater and all other sorts of arts to keep people out of the box, not thinking differently, looking at life and what is important in life in different way. So that's all I can say related to this.
I think it's a good thought to end on, Irena. I mean, let the light in, and I think film and theatre and other forms of arts indeed are really good for doing that. Sadly, we've run out of time. I'm sorry if I didn't get to everybody's questions, but thank you for the contributions from the audience, and particularly thank you to everyone on the panel. It is an extraordinary and wonderful lineup of you all from across the region and with very different perspectives. So a huge thank you for taking part today. And I think Irena did share some links to platforms where you can view award-winning films for Central and European cinema. That's in the chat box if anybody wants to pick up on that. So it only leaves me to thank everybody and thank you in the audience for joining us, and good afternoon, good night, wherever you are. Goodbye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.